This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, today we got Sean Hodgins on joining us from President Century Group. Some people may recognize the name. They've built some very tall towers in the city of Surrey. But more importantly, today we're talking about an amazing project they're doing in Tawasin. And I was really surprised when reading about this, the challenges that they're having considering all the revisions they've made to this project. The grocer-anchored retail, the animated retail they're bringing, all of that stuff. So I'm excited to dive into this to find out where they're at with this and how they can move it forward. But we haven't touched base for a while here. You've been out there traveling the world, I feel like. You're selling homes everywhere. How is the residential market right now? How busy are you?
That is a good question. It's not busy. It's definitely not crazy. I mean, I think everybody in the industry is feeling that for sure. I think, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty and people are sort of taking their time with things. And, you know, some segments of the market have just, you know, investors particularly kind of taken a big pause, right? So, you know.
Is there any pockets? Is there pocket markets that are busy?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, stuff that's sort of very much end user, you know, a family townhouse type of vibe versus like a downtown condo, right? Downtown condo tend to be more investor. That's, you know, a very slow segment of the market. But, you know, there's definitely still people buying and selling. But it's, you know, it's not 2021, right? So
No, it's not. It's coming back, though. I feel it. I can tell you on the commercial side of things, they really started to take off. I think we really felt it like late May, early June. It felt to really, really take off. And the interest, the sentiment, the phone calls, the showings, the transactions that are now happening, the closings that are happening. It's feeling like it's getting somewhat back to normal, at least on the commercial side of it. We always struggled from good inventory. And I think I was pretty vocal. If we had probably decent inventory the first half of the year, I think we would have felt that we would have probably seen more transactions. But because there wasn't, it's making the back half of the year really, really busy. It feels like everyone's chasing the same thing, though. So if we can find it, we're going to go there. What else is going on in your world, Mel? I feel like we haven't touched base for a while.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, just kind of tidying up some of my my systems and getting things in order. Well, the market is a little bit slower. Had a good summer. I was traveling a bit. So that was kind of good timing because, you know, things weren't crazy in the market. Yeah.
And now that you're back, the market's going to pick
back,
up.
Back in full swing, getting everything all tidied up and ready to go for when things really do pick up.
Amazing. Well, without further ado, let's get to our interview today with Sean Hodgins, President, Century Group, talking all about the Tawasin Town Center project. Enjoy, guys.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
Attention realtors, homebuyers, and investors. If you missed out on Atlin at Clayton Crest by Zentera Developments, here's your second chance.
Atlin sold 80% in just 3 months, Adam. And because of that success, Zentera is launching Building 2, Butte.
Located in West Clayton and walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, prices are still low for now, but not for long.
Homeowners across the Lower Mainland are using equity from their current homes to invest in West Clayton, ahead of the SkyTrain and the next market upswing. Because when that SkyTrain is complete and the market rebounds, it'll be too late.
This, Matt, is how wealth is built. Find out why Atlan sold so fast and register now at buttecondos.ca. That's B-U-T-E condos.ca.
Okay, we're here today with Sean Hodgman, President, Century Group. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Corey. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking the time. Can you maybe let our listeners know more maybe about yourself and Century Group?
Sure. Well, Century Group was founded by my father in 1957 and mostly doing initially residential real estate. And we've branched out to doing some commercial. We still do mostly residential, but throughout Metro Vancouver and a little bit on Vancouver Island. And I became president in 2007 after my father, George, passed away. And an accountant by training, but I'm very passionate about urban planning.
Well, we appreciate taking the time to join us today, because one specific topic that obviously we wanted to, you know, base a conversation around is kind of the stuff that you guys are doing in Tawasin. And I'll let you kind of tell us a little bit more about it. But I guess the premises of it is you guys are doing a bunch of work. It's OCP compliant for official community plan for those listeners who aren't aware of what that works. But it feels like there's been a little bit of a bottleneck. Can you maybe tell us a little bit more about the project and kind of what you guys are experiencing?
Yeah. So the Washington Town Center Mall is an 8-acre site, as its name would suggest. It's at the very center of Tawasin at 12th and 56th Street. And we have developed a plan, or had developed a plan in 2023. We started consultations with the community around redeveloping the site. We really focused on the commercial retail experience and what that would feel like at the ground level, but with still a lot of housing. And there were four towers and a library that we were building and transferring over to the community together with the library plaza. We're building a new thrifty food store, a number of things like that. And that was an application we made almost a year ago. It was October of 2024. And I can answer any questions about it, but that's basically the nature of the project and what our application was.
Now, I think a lot of listeners may not understand how the development process works. And a lot of them might just think that, you know, you buy this land and you kind of pick what you want to do and off you go. One of the challenges it sounds like you guys are having is getting this through the city planning process and the community there. Are you guys, what has been the pushback or what have the challenges been? I would think, you know, you're bringing homes to a community that needs them. You have a grocery anchor animated retail base, which I think every city planner would love to hear. What type of challenges are you experiencing with?
The challenge that we faced was the preconception in the community of what the community would be and would not be. And we faced an opposition that is basically no towers. They do not. So opposition has coalesced around that rallying cry. And that seems to be the sole focus. And it's gone so ridiculous as to basically counting the number of floors and without any consideration for anything that we are trying to do or bring to the community in the way of amenities or upgraded retail. And that's really been the frustration for me. And council has thus far responded to that by preemptively saying we had to go rework the proposal, despite the fact I should point out that it was up to 24 stories, and that's what the official community plan allowed for. That official community plan was actually passed in 2024, and we made our application based on that. So if the official community plan is not a planning document that we can base our application decisions on, then it really throws into question whether or not there is any certainty for the development community to go forward based on established plans.
So now, again, this might be an obvious question here. If I'm a municipality and we kind of adopt an OCP that allows for this type of density, why would they also push back on that when you have a developer like yourself that's willing to build and take that risk in this community? to bring housing to a market that needs it?
I think it comes down to political pressure and concern about whether you're going to be reelected or not.
Yeah.
And that is certainly part of the question that I think is, I think they are also trying to be fair to some on council. I think they are trying to be responsive to what they see as community concerns. My concern back to them is that the issue of community character, which is sort of the rallying cry behind the No Towers movement, is that character, I don't think it even exists in our community. It's a very old, tired town center. And I think really it is just code for we just don't want anything and we don't want any people living here. That is the concern that I have. People who own homes don't really care about a housing crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point.
Now, from Plan B, is there a Plan B? And what type of message do you get from a development community where it's like, we're undertaking, you know, tens of millions of dollars in risk to bring these communities together? We review the OCP, we see what the city's adopted, and then the city comes back and says, no, we're not willing to do that. What type of message does that send to you as a developer? And where do you turn to if that ever comes to the case?
Well, it should be clear that at this point, the resolution from council that was in April of 2025 was, we're not going to pass this plan. People don't want towers that are 24 stories high. Go back and rework it and come back. And we have now done that. We resubmitted with towers that are no higher than 18 stories. And, you know, some people are hating that. But to your question, and we can talk about kind of what, hopefully we can talk about what that revision includes, because I think it's a real mistake just to be counting floors, and that's the basis of all decisions that are made. I think the question that you pose is what is the message that sends to the development community, and it is really the uncertainty whether any application should be made at all, because if it is subject to the vagaries, if we can't rely on the specified guidelines in the official community plan, then what can we rely on? It just comes down to, you know, really the flavor of the month or you know, whether or not council is going to respond to community concerns or not. And rather than approve projects that are compliant with the OCP. I think, you know, those are kind of maybe stark differentiation, but I think that's really what it comes down to. So if they're not going to pass approved projects that appear to be well in compliance with UCP, then it sends a chill in the development community that they're not going to bother redeveloping their properties.
Well, that's where I thought you'd probably go with it. If I'm a community and I'm trying to attract developers and developer capital to come to our community and build out our community for us and bring housing, if what we say or what we propose we want to see, and then what we actually approve at a later date, I think you would just end up pushing the development community back. And that's going to create probably a bigger problem as these communities grow and the developers start to build elsewhere, that these communities are going to see us, you know, almost like a glass ceiling effect of where they sit, because they don't have the attraction to developers. You did mention about the revised plan that you've brought forward from your previous plan. Can we maybe touch a little bit on that? Like, what does this revised plan look like maybe versus what it did before, and the city's feedback that what you've now delivered to them?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the original plan, it went to public consultation early this year in February and March. And as I said, there was a council discussion and resolution that came out of that consultation in April. And we've spent the past 6 months really working on the various factors that would go into the revision. I think one of the key ones is reducing the scale and the scope of the project to what was original. The original plan had 5 phases. We planned out the whole site.
Wow.
And had 1,433 homes. And we've reduced it down to the first 2 phases, which is 600 homes. That's one of the things we did. to try to tell the community that, look, we're not asking for everything to be approved. Now, let us do the first two phases. Let us prove this out, that we can build something that will add to the community, not detract from the community. So that was one of the factors. We reduced the tower height from 24 to 18. What was going to be two taller towers are now three towers to sort of distribute out that density in a more gentle way. And the other big thing was the original plan included a library. We were proposing to build and fit out a 16,000 square foot library. Delta is part of the Fraser Valley Regional Library Network, so they are responsible for providing library space. There's an old library on site that we actually leased to Delta. And so we were proposing to double the size to 16,000, dedicated to Delta so that they would have a permanent library. One of the interesting factors in our discussions was a lot of people were very dismissive of a library as a community amenity. I believe that that is based on some preconceptions from 20 or 30 years ago of what libraries meant at the time, which is stacks of books. These are not the libraries of today, which are more about social spaces. Podcast studios for amateur podcasters. There's all sorts of amenities that are in modern libraries. And I've spent a lot of time researching what those are and building that into the plan. It did not resonate with the community. Big factor that came up was healthcare. That seemed to be a kind of existential threat. Is overdramatic, but I think people had been experiencing the occasional shutdown of the Delta hospital emergency room. Many people are having trouble finding primary care doctors. There's a crisis in healthcare in our corner of Metro Vancouver. So we've proposed in our project to build and dedicate a 6,500 square foot medical clinic space and dedicate it to the local hospital foundation to allow them to curate the type of hospital healthcare delivery model that would best suit the community. That could be an urgent and primary care center, which the province would have to agree to operate, but it would at the very least allow some imaginative healthcare delivery, such as Colwood has done on Vancouver Island, where the city runs a clinic and actually pays for the doctors and then in turn bills the province. So that is the biggest shift in terms of how we're delivering a community amenity to the community. And I think that has attracted some positive attention for sure.
You know, I'm a little baffled, and I'm not a developer, so I'm not living what you guys have to live with on a daily basis. But why wouldn't a community be open arms and receptive to that you're bringing this stuff that they're requiring or asking for into their community to benefit them, yet they're pushing back on everything else?
Well, that is a question that I have thought long about. The best people to answer that are the people who are opposing this project, but I think they're getting thinner and thinner in their ranks but I do think that the community does see, I would like to think that the community is seeing that we are adapting to the, you know, sometimes reasonable concerns of the community about not having too many homes built at one time, not overwhelming our roads with traffic. So, you know, those are concerns that, perception is reality. So if you believe that, you know, approving 1,400 homes would be a mistake because it allows too much growth too soon. And we've adjusted that and changed our amenity to something that people have said they want. I would like to think that, you know, we will turn the corner.
Is there a plan C?
It's still up in the air.
That you get not what you're looking for in this next meeting? Like, where would you go from here as a developer in that circumstance? Obviously a revision, but what does that look like?
I don't think we would revise it any further. I think we've been around, we've been going around in circles with this long before the current application cycle. And we had tried other proposals through previous councils, and I just would question whether there's really any. I mean, like I said, if they can't approve something that is compliant with the OCP, and why do I think anything
absolutely
would be approved in the future? And it's very expensive, and it's an emotional drain to go through these processes. So I think probably our next best option is simply to renew the leases on the old mall. And you know, when you look at it, it's basically a 1970s strip mall that my father built in 1971. You know, we added a new Thrifty Foods in 2001, but much of the mall is just an old, dilapidated strip mall. And I think that is the end result of this thing, is that for a generation, see nothing happen.
Now, Century Group's obviously, you've built high density areas like in the city of Surrey and stuff like that. How have you found working with maybe a larger municipality that versus maybe a smaller municipality that maybe that smaller municipality could hopefully learn from some of those larger decision-making processes? Because obviously you guys have built some very, very tall towers in the city of Surrey.
Yes. Well, we have a very good, I do want to say that I really respect the staff at Delta and the council at Delta. I realize that as elected officials, they are faced with tremendous pressures, but I also knew that getting into the job, and I think they have to do their job. But in comparison, I would say I've had a very good relationship with the city of Surrey. They're very proactive in their planning. It's really just, in terms of how the mindset is about getting stuff done, it is really a pleasure working there. And I think the thing that they can learn is, don't be scared of working with the development community.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty lucky here. I mean, when you look at the BDs and the BOZAs and others that are, I mean, these are people who live and breathe their communities. They are of this community. We're not some offshore faceless group. We are held to high standards in our projects. And we walk the streets and eat in the same restaurants as everyone else. So we're held to account for what we do. And I think the lesson should be that, the positive relations that Surrey and other municipalities that we work in is that you can work with the development community and achieve the ends that you're trying to make for your community.
I know you're excited, obviously, about this project and very hopeful that this revision is going to get pushed forward. You guys are obviously on the forefront and looking for the next best thing when it comes to development. Is there any other projects you have in the pipeline or other communities that you could speak about that excite you right now?
Yes, we are working in Millardville and the city of Coquitlam. We have an exciting project that is coming forward there. We're working with Metrobank Housing with the site that they own, and we've made a joint application to the city of Coquitlam to see their old project. They have a 30-unit housing development there that is dates back from decades, and we are going to rebuild that elsewhere on the site and go from 30 units to 100 units.
Wow.
and turn that building back over to Metro Vancouver Housing, which is, as I found out, is the largest non-market housing provider in Metro Vancouver, which is something that I didn't know before I started working with Metro Vancouver Housing, and they've been very good to work with. So there's a as well as some higher density homes and some retail and daycare. That's another very exciting project that we're working on. And working, as you know, in Surrey and right across from King George Sky Train Station
with
the vaingloriously named Century City.
Yes.
So that
a Amazing. Well, Sean, we appreciate you taking the time today to join us and sort of walk through a little bit of some of the challenges that developers face when you're trying to put forward some housing. Do you have a few more minutes to hang out with us? We have a six-pack of lighthearted questions we ask all of our guests to get to know you a little bit more outside of the office.
Sure.
First question up. Favorite vacation spot when you find the time?
Oh, boy. I have traveled extensively and my favorite vacation spot. I would say Italy.
Good choice. Good choice.
I love small towns in Italy. I think to be able to hang out in a town square where they barely speak English is one of the real joys of life, just to really live an Italian town square.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. If I were to grab your iPod, your iTunes right now, what would I hear in your iTunes? What's on your playlist?
I am listening to The History of the Second World War,
okay.
Which is, I'm on episode number 16. I think I have about 250 more episodes to go. I listen to the New York Times, The Daily, and I listen to CBC's The Front Burner. So I like news and I like documentary style.
Awesome. Awesome. Favorite movie or TV show?
I would say one of my favorite TV shows is The Wire, which was from the early 2000s.
Awesome. Maybe a book recommendation for our listeners. Does not necessarily have to be real estate related, but it can be.
One of the best books would be A Dreadnought, and I'm trying to remember. It's a history of the naval race between Britain and Germany prior to World War I.
Wow.
And sounds dry, I'm sure, to your average listener, but I thought it was one of the most interesting books that shed so much light on the origins of the First World War.
So you're in Italy, it's Friday night, you've had a few glasses of wine, and someone sticks a karaoke mic in front of you. What song are you singing?
I will decline that one. I will not be assaulting anyone's ears with any karaoke.
You've been obviously around this business for a long time. What is your prediction for the end of 2025 heading into 2026, considering all the challenges we've had through 2025 from political and inflationary issues? And how does the rest of the 2025 finish off with regards to real estate?
I think it's going to remain very flat. I wish I had a better answer for you, but I do not see a light at the end of the tunnel right now. I think there is too much uncertainty, and the mood in the buying public right now is still very down. I think once we get more stability with another maybe cut in interest rates, if that is in the offing, I think that will do wonders for making the buying public, able to really finance purchases that they've been thinking about a long time. I think there is always people reorganizing their lives. They're getting married. They're getting divorced. Their kids are moving out. So there's always that latent demand for people buying or trading up on houses. So. And I'm just thinking residential right now, but I think most people are not eager to buy.
Fair enough. Well, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. How can our listeners find out more about what you guys are doing at Century Group, yourself, and your amazing projects?
I would go to centurygroup.ca and visit our website. On Instagram, we have a number of a video post about our various related entities. We are in the restaurant business. Our construction team, Blue City Construction, has got some interesting projects it's doing, including a social housing project we're building in downtown Vancouver. So all those channels, I would visit those.
Amazing. Well, Sean, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us today. We really appreciate it.
Corey, thank you for your interest.
Take care, Sean. Bye-bye.
Okay, goodbye.
There you have it, folks. Our interview today, Sean Hodgins, president, Century Group, talking about Tawasin Town Center. I was really surprised. I can speak more freely. I'm not a developer. if I'm a community and I pass an OCP, official community plan, saying, here's what we'd like to see, in order for a city to develop, it's got to be kind of a partnership between developers and developers' capital and the local municipality. And what type of message do you send if you're like, hey, here's what we'd like to see? A developer's like, no problem, here you go. And they're like, nope, don't like to see that.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes you wonder about the OCP process, right? Like, they publish this document and they say, hey, these are all the things we want. Well, like, are they consulting? I mean, I guess they would be doing some consulting at that point, but you would think at that point it's hey, this is what we're doing. We're going forward, but apparently not, unfortunately.
I think it's a challenging time because what's going to happen, and it happens actually all the time, is you get like a slowdown in development, nothing happens. Then all of a sudden the market picks up, communities kind of turn around, lenders get back in the fold. And then you've got, you know, fast forward a year or two, when all the projects that are not getting built right now don't get delivered. And then you get a housing crunch again. Because now you've got open immigration. You hope you have international students back in place. Who knows what happens to Airbnb. And also now you got a housing crunch again, but there's not a product in the pipeline to absorb the demand. And then everyone throws their hands up. Like, it's very predictable. We go through it all the time. I understand developing approval process is a city by city, municipality situation, but it's going to happen again. You heard it here first. Melissa, anyone who wants to do residential, sell their condo, even in a slow market that you're going to sell for them, how can someone get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477 or email me at melissa@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Anyone wanting to do commercial real estate, they can reach out to us at William Wright Commercial anytime. You can send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. You can visit our website, williamwright.ca, and sign up for the latest and greatest news. Or you can call our head office in Vancouver, 604-428-5255, where you'll find the latest and greatest listings available.
All right.
Take care.
Subscribe today.